Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening, Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld with Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, my guest is Milton Stern, author of The Gay Jew in the Trailer Park. Have you heard the one about The Gay Jew in the Trailer Park? What happens when a lifelong apartment dweller decides that the only way to achieve the American dream is to find a home? The gay Jew fit in with his trailer park neighbors. Good evening, Milton. How are you tonight?
How are you?
I'm great. What's going on in Maryland?
Oh, we're just pouring as usual. You know, it doesn't rain in Indianapolis in the summertime, but it rains in Maryland every day.
First of all, let me congratulate you on voting for gay marriage in November. That was really uber cool. And you have the coolest governor compared to the one we've got down here in Florida. So there you go.
Yes, we do. We do have the coolest governor. He also plays in a rock band in sleeveless shirts. He looks really good doing it.
Not good guns, you know, for a governor. I mean, he's pretty hot. Okay, let's get off that. Well, that's a poor choice of words. All right.
Right.
Milton, I'm reading your book today. I decided to just read some excerpts to the book while I was actually on the shift at the gay library this afternoon in lovely Lauderdale. And my co-worker of all is a retired Jewish lady who has a gay son, straight lady. And so I'm reading her portions of the book. And she's like giggling in layers and layers of fat and making me repeat it. Of course, we've got people coming in the building that are kind of like wondering what in the hell is going on here. She said, "You sound like Jackie Mason." Does everyone that reads your book make a Jackie Mason accent?
I never thought of it that way. No, people tell me I write like I talk. So maybe I talk like Jackie Mason. I don't know. I could talk like Jackie Mason. I'm not quite sure.
I think you do. You have that little inflection up and down there, but you know, you don't look like him. You're a very handsome man. And very nice. Let me just give the listeners a little bit of background. Milton writes a weekly blog on you can get to all of his writings, his blog, his books. Please buy his books on MiltonStern.com. Those maintenance fees in the trailer park are not cheap, I hear.
No.
Because they're going up because of the insurance. And he writes a weekly blog, and it's on gayjewmobilehome.blogspot.com, but you can link that through MiltonStern.com. How long ago did you start this blog?
I started it in I got to think back. It was April of 2011 while I was shopping for a home.
So this was
I actually started it the day that I found this house.
Great, great. And give us a little background of how you ended up in a house with wheels.
Well, I lived in apartments for 26 years, and for 26 years, other people's marital problems became mine. I spent 12 and a half years in an apartment in Mount Pleasant, which is neither a mountain nor pleasant, discuss, in Mount Pleasant, D.C., where the first night I was there, someone was shot in the head across the street. And the last night I was there, someone was shot in the head across the street. And the years between were just as nice. With people living above me, banging and crashing, screaming and yelling. And then I moved to what they called luxury living in Rockville, which is the armpit of Maryland.
Okay.
And on the other side of my wall was a woman who spent all night screaming, "Hit me, hit me, go ahead, hit me, I dare you to hit me," to her husband. And he wouldn't hit her, but all of us would scream, "Hit her, so she'll shut up." And I said, "I've got to get away from living on the other side of people."
Oh, my God.
So you had to buy a house for $250,000. You can get a 600-square-foot studio condominium that does not allow dogs and has no parking. And I wanted a house. I wanted a new house because when you rent apartments, you inherit other people's mess. Mm-hmm. And I'm a bit of a clean. And you can only get it as clean as the last person who lived there.
Right.
And I got tired. Waking up in the middle of the night, hearing screaming, yelling, and banging against my walls. And I actually, without telling anyone, visited the factory where they build these, and I was impressed, and I started looking. And it was actually I thought about it for about 2 years, and I finally just said, let me just see what's out there. And I looked at one trailer park after another and found this one by accident. And this is actually a nice mobile home community. The average age is about 55.
Okay. And how big is
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
How big are these communities? I see them all the time. Florida is the, I guess, world headquarters of trailer communities or mobile home communities. I believe that's the word used. And, you know, I see them, but they seem endless. But how many people actually live in one of these subdivisions?
Well, ours has 200 units.
Wow.
But that's rather small. I saw some that were up to 500 units. But ours is 200 units. Ours is only 17 years old. And there was apparently another community nearby that had closed many years ago. And the woman who lives five houses down from me was the first one to move in here.
Uh-huh.
And they, you know, so this, it's a nice, and everything's land. This place has rules. Like, it's worse than a the condo Nazis in Florida that you all can identify with. But I like that because everybody's place is clean and there's no furniture on porches, no cars on blocks. I mean, it's
oh, good.
You know, everybody's got a – yeah, they inspect your home twice a year.
Oh, good, good.
It's amazing.
Yeah, because you do have the you know, you have the mental image of, you know, a trailer park, the way you know you're on the cover of this book.
Yeah.
With, you know, and of course you've got the cute little.
Oh, that's not me. The guy on the cover of the book. No,
yeah.
I haven't looked like that since 1983. So, I mean, I look good for 50, but I don't look that good.
Said, I'm a Jewish mother. I need to find all my Jewish friends, you know, dates. Okay, forget it. Anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, you think of a mobile home community, you think of cars on blocks, you think of shopping carts turned on and used as barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen. You do see, you know, the pink flamingos and the Christmas lights on 12 months out of the year. These are images. And also, in my life, I always believe, you know, I always think of, you know, the trailer park and Sorted Lives. And, you know, throwing, you know, everything out on the lawn and the drama that goes with that. But you don't seem to.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of drama in your trailer park, in your neighborhood?
No, not at all. But I will say this. There is a difference, a huge difference in the people who are your neighbors.
Right.
When you live in an apartment like it did in Mount Pleasant, you know all your neighbors because you're all watching out for each other because of crime.
Right.
When you live in an apartment like it did in Rockville, which was so-called luxury living, no one looks at you or talks to you because they all think they're better than you. Here, everyone's on an equal footing, so there's no social ladder to climb in a trailer park. You just about hit as high as you can in a trailer park, and you can't go much lower either. But yeah, I mean, the conversations are a lot more interesting. Like my neighbor told me the other day that she was happy to hear that her son doesn't have herpes, although his wife tested positive for herpes, and that's why they're getting a divorce. These are things I never heard before from neighbors.
Right. Well, I agree. I don't hear that here. I live in a typical. There happens to be 11 or 12 gay couples living in this building, but they might as well be called Blanche and Harry from New Jersey. We act like, you know, little old ladies. We get in the elevator and complain about the parking lot at Costco, and you know where you're going to dinner, and you know the weather, or the traffic, and you know. Today it's funny. I'm going to read for a couple of excerpts that I thought were hilarious.
Sure.
Okay, I'll have to just bear with me because I've done this with authors before, and what I think is funny, other people don't think is funny. I'm going to go to the loud talkers because that's like my pet peeve. Also, we're very similar in a lot of ways. The loud talkers. There are loud mouths, big mouths, and loud talkers. Yes, there's a difference, and they are not to be confused with those who have loud voices. I have a voice that carries, a loud voice, if you will. When I whisper, they can hear me in Paraguay. Growing up, this caused me a lot of problems. If a group of kids was carrying on, I was the one who got yelled at because my voice was the loudest and the only one that could be heard. In musical theater, it was a godsend. I never needed to be milked. I was the one called...
Mike, you said I didn't need to be milked.
Oh, I'm
That's a double entendre.
Sorry. Oh, my God.
No, bro. I wasn't in that kind of theater.
Okay. Not yet. You're only 50.
Not yet.
You're young.
Right.
It's what called a male Ethel Merman. I'm going to clip it out. Big mouths also blapper, but they tell your secrets to whomever you're nearest. You're standing in a bar next to a really hot guy, and the big mouth walks up to you, and your future ex-husband points to you and says to Mr. Wright, "You should have seen this guy last week, scratching like there was no tomorrow. Crabs are a bitch, I always say, don't you? This is hilarious. I mean, I had so much fun with it. So, I guess you get your material from everyday life. Is that correct?
Everyday life. Something happens, and I, it brings back a memory. I have eidetic memory, which is a curse and a blessing at the same time. And it brings back a memory or a conversation I had as a kid or, you know, years ago, and then I build upon that, yes.
So I know, I'm reading
something has to happen.
Right. Well, I'm reading the book, and every so often you'll say that so-and-so drove a Ford Falcon or a Dodge Dart and something like that. Of course, you're a car freak, and we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Right.
But tell us about wearing your mother's wedding dress.
My brother loved that one. Growing up, my mother was a clothes horse, and she pretty much took over half my closet in my little bedroom in the house, along with her closet. And in my closet were every outfit she owned between 1954 and 1968, which is my favorite year in my favorite era in women's fashion. And I would be bored, and I'd go up to into my bedroom and close the door, and here were all those clothes. So the world's greatest drag show took place in Newport News, Virginia, on Dresden Drive without anyone ever knowing it. And one night I found, wrapped in plastic, this green skirt and this off-the-shoulder top that I just looked fabulous in when I was 9 years old. And I was prancing around the room in it, and then I put it away very neatly. And years later, my mother was getting ready to go to a party in the 80s, and those skirts came back in town. She says, I think I'm going to wear this. You know, I was married in this.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, my God, I wore my mother's wedding dress. Now, it wasn't a white wedding dress. She was her third marriage. But still, how many people can say they had on their mother's wedding dress at age 9?
Not many men.
Not many men.
Yeah, a few girls may have stepped into that. I'm going to do a little bit of a plug. Milton's book, The Gay Jew in the Trailer Park, is available through a click on his website, miltonstern.com, as well as his other books, which are listed right there. We're just going to be talking about this book because I think this one was hilarious. So there it goes, my little plug. Go make this boy some money tonight. He needs it. You'll get it by Christmas probably if you pay that through the nose for shipping. Oh, Kindle. You get it in 1 minute for Kindle.
Oh, yeah, the Kindle version. Yeah, go on the Kindle version. That's where 90% of the sales are anyway on Kindle. So, yeah, and all my other books are on Kindle. So if you go on my website, you'll see on Tuesdays they play Mahjong and Michael's Secrets and Harriet Lane, America's First Lady. You know I'm going to plug the rest of them. So
I was going to ask you to do that. Okay. I didn't want everyone's favorites, and I'll do them in the wrong order, and I'll say another thing like milked, okay? So
right. Yeah, I never was milked on stage. No.
Yet. It's a yet. Don't
yet.
You know, you're young.
Yes, yes.
I've been in Florida a long time, and I've done things here that I don't think I ever would have done. That's another whole story. But
I did things in that bedroom on Dresden Drive that I still haven't admitted to. So
okay.
Go ahead.
Well, that's another book. You're young. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell
me
about Sylvia Rose.
About who?
Sylvia Rose.
Sylvia Rose was my drag persona that emerged in the late 80s as a host for a charity event. Most of my friends that I came out with in the 80s are now gone. To say that is an understatement. There are only two left out of the group that we were. And they all died of AIDS. And we were doing a charity event for an AIDS charity event. And a couple of my drag queen friends wanted to dress me up. And I said, I'm 6'4". This was before RuPaul. So if you were 6'4 and a drag queen, you were going to look like Gigantor. I said, you can't, I'm not going to look good. They said, why don't we make into, something a little different? I said, how about a middle-aged Jewish woman, since that's all I know. That's what I grew up with, middle-aged Jewish women. So Sylvia Rose emerged, and she talked like this, and she smoked Benson and Hedges, and she came out and introduced the acts, and then she went into retirement. And then she came out again for a Purim party, and she made her last appearance about 10 years ago. I did my bit of drag last year when we had the 100th birthday Lucille Ball party at our club's Invitational. And, everyone always does when they do Lucille Ball, they're going to do Lucy Ricardo, either the candy pack or vitamin or vegetable or what have you.
Right.
And I said, I'm going to do Annette from Here's Lucy.
Oh, good.
And that meant tuxedo top, no pants. black stockings, steel shoes, white tuxedo shirt with the white tie, top hat, the wig, scuff and everything. And I had to walk from the hotel down Baltimore Avenue, like this. I didn't care. And I have to tell you, I'm friends with Lucy Arnaz. So I sent her a picture of it afterwards, and she said I made her day because she got so many pictures of Lucy Ricardo, and no one had thought of doing anything from Here's Lucy.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
You forget when you're in drag, and there was a hot waiter there handing out shots, and I'm flirting with him, forgetting that I'm in full makeup. And
oh,
I'm not
God.
Looking good either, because there's a certain point when you got to stop, and it was totally tragic. When I got back in the hotel and looked in the mirror, I mean, I look like my grandmother in drag, as it is.
Oh,
and I look like my grandmother. Yeah, I look just like her. And it was, I thought, oh, my God, I was flirting with a hot waiter in drag. I just totally forgot. There I am. And I walked back to the hotel like that, too, with no pants. But that was it. It was all retired after that.
Oh, okay. Well, you never know. I mean, she might come back.
Yeah.
So tell us about the car club. What this is your big passion, and is classic cars, and you mentioned them throughout the book. You drive a classic car. What are you driving right now?
Well, I have a 1983. It's hardly a classic. To anyone who collects cars, what I drive are not considered classics. They're considered pieces of crap. But I drive a 1983 AMC Eagle station wagon.
No, that's a classic.
That's just an old car. It's just an old car. It's hardly what you would call vintage. I admit that I don't drive Cadillacs and Lincoln, although I had a 79 Lincoln at one time for about 8 months, which I loved. But it didn't fit in the driveway here. I brought it over, pulled up to the house, and half of it was in the street. So that I got to go. But I also have a 59 Rambler American that is going through a restoration that's taking about as long as menopause. So, you know, when it's done, they're going to hand me the keys to hand to my driver to take me back and forth from the nursing home.
Right.
But that'll be when it's done. But that's what I drive, yes. And I am president for the next, what's today, the 20th? If the world doesn't end tomorrow, for the next 11 days, I am president of the Straight Eight Car Club, which is part of Lanza Car Club International.
Uh-huh.
And then I end my 4-year term, 4 years, four 1-year terms at the end of this month. But yeah, I'm a car freak. Yeah, total car freak. I write, I edit the Car Club's newsletter, and I love writing articles about mostly independents and cars that most people don't really pay attention to.
Uh huh. But this is great. Now, when did that hobby get started?
Well, I've always had have you noticed that it's hard to talk to me because you have to interrupt because I constantly talk? I forgot to warn you ahead of time.
Okay.
You have to wait for me to breathe.
I took out.
Yeah.
It makes sense the same way. We're okay.
It's at a very, 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 very young age. I remember, I think before I can talk, my Aunt Flossie's 1960 Valiant. I remember every car I drove. She had the best car. She also had a 60 Bel Air Chevrolet Impala.
Beautiful car.
Baby blue, and she had a 67 Pro and a 74 Malibu. She had the best cars.
Great.
But My brother, too.
You're breaking up a little bit. So,
am I? Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. You're just breaking up just a little bit. I think you're moving around. Are you moving around? Is that right? Sometimes
I'm sitting totally still.
Okay. Then God knows what's going on. You said you're having a storm up there.
Yeah.
That could be doing it. Okay.
Yeah, we are.
Very, very cool. Okay, your whole life revolves around sitcoms, but one of the things you do, I studied martial arts also. I'm a red belt in Kenpo Karate. We have a lot in common.
Right.
We drive each other crazy. My husband is a psychiatrist. I don't know if you did any history on me. I've got a completely crazy life, which I'm not allowed to write about because there's restraining orders and stuff. But anyway, let me do the.
I once dated a psychiatrist, and I told my friends I'm seeing a therapist. They said, "Oh, it's about time."
Yeah. Well, I don't have any copays anymore. It's just fabulous. It really is. It's just the best.
Yeah.
And the drugs.
Well, what do you think about that?
Wonderful. I love it. How do you feel about that? We hear that a lot.
Yeah, really.
I throw things. Anyway, we're gonna. It's not about me. All right. Krav Maga. Let me read from the Krav Maga. The title of that chapter is... Wait, it's so long. That's one of the longer chapters. What's the name of that chapter? Okay, I'll just start reading.
The book in front of me, just in case.
No, Close Combat. Okay. The class ended with a very intimate moment. He asked us to pick someone who was nearest our size. I got as far away from Jeffrey Dahmer as I could and picked out the 6'2", 23-year-old, hunkalicious slab of masculinity. Then we were instructed to lie on our backs while our partner got into a push-up position above us, wrap our wrists around his neck, and then allow him to crawl across the floor, dragging us all the way. Once at the other end of the room, you switch positions. I was the second fastest one in the room. And honey, I hadn't had that much fun with a man's arms around my neck since Bush choked on a pretzel. Thank God I was wearing a cup. I could not wait till the next class. Are you still studying?
No, I had to stop due to an injury back in September.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I'm taking a break from it for a while.
Now, were the people in the class aware of your sexual orientation?
Oh, yeah, and there was one straight guy that was, I think he was ultra curious, because one day we had to do this thing where you did a tuck, a buck tuck and roll,
and you had
to grab the person's shirt, and he kept grabbing my nipple, and I said, he's giving me nurples. And I said to him, you just grabbed my nipple. And then he grabbed both and twisted them.
Whoa.
And I was like, oh, okay. Then he friended me on Facebook, and he was always telling me how he missed me seeing me in class and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. So,
yeah,
straight guys love me. I don't know why. Middle-aged women and straight guys, that's my audience.
Hey, what a good audience. You know, there's a lot of them. But there's a lot of middle-aged women. There's
a
lot of straight guys. You got a huge demographic
there.
Don't knock it.
I do. I drink beer and I wear flannel. So what can I tell you?
And you like cars?
Yeah, I like cars.
Right, and they're not BMWs and Audis. You know, brand new ones. That's all they talk about down here. I'm going to do another little plug. I've got my little timer set every so often. I talk about selling books. Milton's books are available on www.miltonstern.com. MiltonStern.com. You can find all of his books there and a link to his blog, the gayjewmobilehome.blogspot.com. That's hard to say all at once, but I did it. Anyway, so let's go into the mechanics of your book writing. You said most of your sales right now are in Kindle. How has that changed in the years that you've been writing? What's gone on? What's going on with your life in publishing?
In publishing?
Yeah, how things change.
I don't understand the question.
How things changed since you started writing and now? Because you've been writing for a
while. Well, I mean, before you had to depend a great deal on hard book sales, because electronic books, when I wrote my first book, were nothing but PDFs mailed to someone's computer.
Right.
And nobody wants to sit at a computer and read a PDF.
Correct.
And I work for the Starbucks Press, which is the last independently owned gay publishing company. I'm the vice president of the company.
Oh.
And we were the first on Kindle, first independent publisher on Kindle. They asked us on a beta version of when it first came out to put 5 titles up. We liked it so much, we put up our entire backlist. And as a result, we ended up surviving while no one else could.
Great.
90% of our sales are Kindle. Very
Great.
Few people buy paperbacks or hardcover books anymore at all. As far as my writing, it didn't really change writing. It changed the way I promoted the books in that I'm able to use social media more. People are more likely to buy a book for Kindle. One, it's half the price.
Sure.
And if a book on Kindle and you're reading and you're going, I don't like this, well, then you can just, you know, go online and get another book rather than carry around another big book with you everywhere.
Correct. Right.
So
and traveling.
Anything that makes people read is good. I know there are people that are married to the hard book and like having a book in their hands, and that's wonderful, and I still do like having a book in my hands, but I love having the Kindle because of the convenience. And anything that gets people to read, I'm all for it. If they come out with a ticket or a holograph of me shows up in your house and I read the book to you, even better. I mean, whatever people to enjoy books.
I agree with you. Yeah, I'm not. I as I said, I spent 12 years as the executive director and chair and CEO of the Stonewall Library and Archives down here. We actually have 30,000 books in our collection, the largest collection of gay books anywhere in the world. And even I say it's dying. I mean, I know publishers. I know you're one of the last publishers. Most of them have gone out of business. A couple of them have resurrected in the last few years. But they're all struggling. And the reason they're struggling is their business model doesn't really follow what people's you know, lifestyle is about. We have people walking into our library who are members, who donate money, who are regulars, pick up a book, whip out their iPad, order the book, and walk out. They don't even check it out. They want their own. They want it at the beach. They want it at the coffee shop. You know, they don't.
Right.
They forget it. They're reading two books at once. I hear the same things all at once. Is that, you know, we are maybe we're not as concentrating on stuff, but we are actually reading more. I've seen the statistics, and gay books are back. We are in an LGBT renaissance all of a sudden, and mm-hmm. I think it's through the democratization of self-publishing. I think it's through the promotion. It's not as expensive to promote a book anymore. You do all the work, social media and
right.
website. You actually are making more money than if you relied on an editor, a publisher, an agent, et cetera. I mean, you're per book. I mean, you're making a lot more money.
If you're doing self-publishing, yeah. The part about promotion now with electronic publishing, I mean, we're a real publisher that
right.
I work for. The good thing about electronic publishing is I used to have to try to arrange book signings, which
right.
are a crapshoot. You could show up and 3 people show up, or you can show up and 60 people show up. But 60 people can show up and buy one book. They just want to, you know, hear you talk and hear you read from your book.
Right.
With electronic publishing, I don't even bother with the book signings anymore because they're just a waste of time.
Right.
So I promote through book and everything else. And I've actually what's really funny is Harriet Lane, America's First Lady, which is a book of which I'm most proud, and took a lot of research. It came out 7 years ago. Years ago. I'm still selling copies because through Facebook and my website and other avenues, people are still finding it.
Sure.
And
sure.
usually 18 month shelf life. This book is 8 years old. Granted, I sell 4 or 5 copies a month now.
Right. It's still there. Yeah.
Still selling for $12 the other day on that book. I was like, wow, that's something. You know, but
yeah,
who knew?
Sure. Right, you're right. 8 years later, books are dead. A print book is gone.
Yeah,
gone.
Yeah.
It's in a pile. Nobody. It's in the back of the old bookstore, if there is a bookstore. Yeah. No, the new bookstore is definitely the web, and you're doing a great job. No, I was saying self-publishing and publishing houses like yours and people who, you know, there's just less layers of things to go through, you know, than the olden days. And so you are, you know, there is a democracy.
The thing for people who want to self-publish. On Tuesdays, they played Mahjong, was self-published for about a month, and then it was picked up.
Okay.
The only
way
to get anybody to notice it was to self-publish it, and then my publisher picked it up. And then my publisher hired me.
Right.
You know, he picked it up.
Right.
So I got a job. Yeah.
Okay.
So I actually have 10 self-published versions here.
Good for you. Good for you. Listen, we have 1 minute, 55 seconds left. I told you it would be the fastest 30 minutes of your life.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I told you. Okay. Last minute, what would you do if a young, okay, let's make him good looking, hot little hottie walked up to you at a book signing or a grocery store. Oh, aren't you Milton Stern, the famous writer? I want to be a writer. What do I do?
What I tell any writer is don't worry. I've never experienced writer's block. I just vomit it out. I mean, I just throw it out on the page. Every book ever, it just – throw your words on the page.
Okay,
and
good.
Don't worry about how it's written. Don't worry about the grammar, the syntax, semantics, or anti-semantics, whatever it is. Don't worry about it. Just throw your words on the page. Get your thoughts out there. And then leave it alone. Then come back and revisit it. And write what you know. Don't try to write what you do not know.
Uh-huh.
Because people will read right through that. So if you're going to write a military fantasy novel and you've never been in the military and you don't know anyone who's been in the military, don't write a military fantasy novel unless you do your research. Write what you know, and don't write your memoirs. Nobody cares.
I got that right. Okay.
I'll give you an example. I'll give you the example I give all of them. We, at the publishing company, I get queries where people send me 600-page memoirs of their lives. And I always tell them, Kay Ballard has a career that went 70 years and she wrote her memoirs in 254 pages. Her life's much more interesting than yours.
Well, that's a great way to end on Kay Ballard. Okay,
I ended on Kay Ballard. There's a gay reference.
All right. Milton, thank you. This has been so much fun.
It is. It has. I want to do another 30 minutes.
We'll do it. Well, when your next one comes out, we'll do another one. I've got you on my calendar. Thanks, and good night from Fort Lauderdale. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.